An Irish Independent digital subscription doesn't just get you the news. It gets you the best of Ireland's stories all in one place. Whether it's the best of politics, business, sport, entertainment or lifestyle. Get it all for just €4 a month for 12 months when you first subscribe. Visit independent.ie/subscribe today. Irish Independent. Terms and conditions apply. Cancel anytime.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
On this week's Big Tech Show, when you travel, how do you avoid getting completely ripped off on roaming charges outside of Europe? And what are some of the travel hacks you should know about that aren't included in the tech you buy? We give you all the tips you need to know.
On top of my list, Adrian, is my noise-cancelling headphones. When I put them on, I love that it just goes boom, and you're in this kind of sonic bubble and you can't hear the baby and you can't hear that weird frequency of the aircon on the airplane.
The Big Tech Show. Available on all podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
For the third season in a row, Leinster are into the Champions Cup final after they just about held on against Northampton last Saturday at Croke Park. In 3 weeks' time, we now have Leinster versus Toulouse to look forward to at Spurs Stadium. And on tonight's episode of the Left Wing Podcast, we will be looking back at the semi-final in Croke Park, as well as looking ahead to what promises to be another exciting weekend in the URC playoff race. Will Slattery here with you, delighted to be joined in studio by Keane Tracy and Luke Fitzgerald. And Keane, how on earth did that game come down to the last 2 minutes? You know, 5 minutes into the second half, Leinster pull away. I think 17 points is now the most dangerous lead in European rugby when it comes to a Leinster knockout game. It comes down to Conan and Caelan Doris with one arm each getting a key turnover to seal the win. Like, for you, why did it go from what looked to be a straightforward kind of performance into a final against Toulouse to now the same old questions rearing their head about Leinster's ability to close out games and whether they can actually seal the deal and finally win another Champions Cup?
It was amazing it happened in the Toulouse game 24 hours later as well, didn't it? Like, they were 19 points up and got reeled in by Harlequins as well. Not to the same dramatic effect as Leinster. Look, semi-finals are supposed to be hard to win for a reason, and I know Leinster put themselves into a commanding position and they will have regrets about how they went around it. I think there are lots of different strands to your question, Will, and I've been writing about it in today's paper and online. Firstly, I think they did change their game plan, particularly when they brought the three guys off the bench, Ronan Kelleher, Jack Conan and Jason Jenkins. Two of them who did really well, by the way. Jason Jenkins, I thought, was very good when he came on. Conan came up with the steal. But look, it didn't take a genius to work out that Leinster went to a more kick-heavy approach, with Gibson Park putting up box kicks. Ross Byrne, who probably didn't have his best day, if we're being honest, particularly from the tee, he started playing a little bit deeper. Now, I didn't have a huge problem with their shift in tactics. Be interested to know what you guys think. I just thought they did it too early. I thought they should have kept their foot on the pedal, and I thought there was probably another try there for them. But it just seemed that after Ross Byrne misses that conversion, that they came into containment mode, actually. And I was writing about this in terms of Jack Nienaber's defence in Saturday's paper. One of the many parts that stuck out to me in Chasing the Sun 2, which I watched, was the speech that Nienaber gave the box the week before the Scotland game, the first pool game. And he made a point that, look, you know, their attack is being talked about, blah, 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 but we're not going to be going into containment mode here. We're going to actually go and try and beat them. And I thought Leinster did go into containment mode a little bit, but they just went into it too early. So, but after that, they made so many errors of their own making. So I think Leo Cullen will be more frustrated by the errors that were contained within the tactical shift rather than the tactical shift itself. So I'm thinking back to, they conceded five penalties in 23 minutes, two at a scrum, two at a breakdown, one at a lineout for Joe McCarthy being offside. They lost a couple of lineouts. You had Ryan Baird running across his own goal line, which was a mad decision that they just about got away with because the pack won a scrum penalty against the head. So they started compounding errors, which is something that we don't usually associate with this Leinster team. And that seemed to, I don't know, feed into a little bit of panic. And we should also give credit to Northampton, by the way. I mean, they were excellent, I thought, in terms of how they took their chances. I think a little bit concerning how often they were able to beat the Blitz defence. I think if they score that try in the stroke of a half time, it's a very different game. And both of their tries came from bridge passes over the top and the right edge where they did manage to beat it. So lots in that, Will, I know. But I think Leinster, when they reflect on it, will obviously feel like they never should have been in that situation. But I don't necessarily think it was a case of they stopped playing. I just think they shifted their tactics a little bit too early.
And just, I agree with a lot of what Keane said, and we were discussing off air, so I'll just kind of lead into what we were discussing before we kicked off here, in that you think a lot of the problems that he touched on there stems from the decision of to not play the kind of the key players and to build up to the match, and you thought they looked leggy, and as a result, that's why they maybe leaned so heavily on the kicking game, because they didn't have much energy. I think a lot of people were kind of surprised at the final whistle that the Leinster players looked so out on their feet, and Northampton looked to be the team that far springier, considering they played the rugby in the last couple of weeks. But you think that's a direct result of that?
I think it's because they played rugby.
Yeah,
they're not lifting weights and doing running on the training pitch. The training's all done at this time of the year. It's over. What you have in there is what you have. You're not going to be getting any stronger or quicker now. That's not going to happen. You know, and you need to be able to play, you know, knockout rugby against hardened knockout teams that are playing week in, week out. You've got to take a risk. Some guys are going to get injured. You've got to take some risk to get over the line. And I think they made a massive mistake. And I hope to God that they've realised it and they start playing the guys for the next couple of weeks. The league is really important that they go out and win that as well. And people need to play against teams that are playing, you know, ferocious rugby at the end of the season. That's the only way you get better. You're not going to get better playing against each other at this stage of the year. That's not going to happen. What you do now is you play the matches, you go ahead and you win them, and you try and get some momentum and some familiarity amongst yourselves. You can't be coming into this thing having not played in 2.5 weeks. It's just not... I make a lot of calls on the podcast. I believe that one was one of my best calls. And I think as well, there actually wasn't... a shift in tactics. They played the game differently, but it's because they gave themselves no options. I thought it was unbelievably similar to last year against La Rochelle when they ran out of steam. There was 4 and 5 guys going in, ruck inspecting, or having to go in and rescue a ruck from a bad situation. Some good Northampton defence, but also some terrible play by Leinster. And what ended up happening is, if you see, there was periods in the second half where there was no options for Ross Byrne and for Gibson Park. No options outside them. There was loads of people in weird positions, you know, not ready to take a ball, not set up in good position, not set up to receive the ball. Loads of people, like, you know, 4 and 5 people in rucks at different stages. I had 2 similar pictures last year, and Ross Byrne got an absolute caning last year, as did Gibson Park. And I thought the same thing. They thought they got away with it on the weekend. Ross Byrne got a little bit of it because he missed the kick and people were possibly thinking of having a go at him. But those guys had no options for pretty much a good portion of the second half. And I think it was because the guys weren't used to playing at that level against a team that were not going to quit and that had played some pretty tough rugby the week. A good portion of that Northampton team played the week before. And they look battle-hardened. And I thought they exposed that about Leinster. And I think that Leinster, I'm hoping that's the wake-up call that they need. Because this team is really fit. It's really accurate. And when they play rugby together for a period of time, that's when they play their best rugby. So they need to go ahead and do that. I'd also say, you know, they do miss Keenan massively. Keenan is a massive attacking threat for them. I think in the backfield as well, he opens up the pitch for you. Now, whether or not he can come straight back in and deliver on that form he's had for the last 2 years, you know, it's been a long injury and it looks like it's probably affecting him. It's probably more serious than we know, I think. But if he's back, that will make a huge difference to this Leinster team.
And back I don't pace, don't they, in the back three?
I think they lack a bit of cutting edge. Like, it's all well and
the
good
two
having
Northampton tries the two chip over the top on the left.
To come to that point as well, James Lowe has got to just tackle him. He lets him check back on his inside foot and chip the ball over the top. The chip is going to happen, but the guy who scores the try is the guy who chips the ball. That should never happen. That's basics 101. If someone is kicking the ball in behind you and you have an opportunity, you're in the tackle zone, don't melt him, but get him to ground, because you're out of the game if you have to turn. It's all over. That was a really basic defensive error that really, really annoyed me, I have to say. People need to be watching these things. That was a big mistake by Lowe. You got to just tackle that guy. You don't need to melt him. Don't need to dip the shoulder into him. Just tackle him, take him down, and that situation never actually happens. There's two Leinster guys back there. Even if Porter does fluff it, they get back and dot it down for a goal line. But it's still, I don't know, I find it frustrating to watch them, and I think it's not all the blame shouldn't be laid at the players' feet, actually. I think a bit of this comes on the coaching staff. I think they need to be able to accept some risk and take and play some of their players. It's really important this time of the year. All the training is done, to reiterate that point. That's in the bank. You rely on that, you know, that all the hard work you've done in the early parts of the season. Now, what you do is you prepare for the games mentally, loads of video work, loads of practicing timing moves, different things like that. But you don't need to be on your feet for massive amounts of time. I was frustrated by it, and I felt fairly vindicated about some of the comments I made during the week about them not playing the guys.
I think you want to come in on some of that.
Yeah, like, it's interesting you touch on James Lowe. Robbie Henshaw missed a bad tackle in the build up to the first try as well.
Like, really leggy.
Like, shot out of the line and missed a tackle that you would put your mortgage on Robbie Henshaw making it.
Yeah.
Jordan Larmour then bites in off the line. So that's what I mean by compounding errors. It just seemed to spread through the team by errors that you don't usually associate with guys. I thought, you know, the use of the bench I thought was interesting. I made this point during the Twickenham, on the podcast during the Twickenham game, that I felt that it was almost predetermined that Josh van der Fleer was going to come off at a certain minute. I thought we saw more of that at the weekend. I mean, James at Gibson Park was the best player on the pitch, but Josh van der Fleer, in my opinion, wasn't too far behind him. I thought he was absolutely outstanding.
Baird or Doris should be going off.
Baird had an outstanding first half, but he made several errors in the second half. Lost the line out that led to the second try, I think it was. Like I said, ran across his own goal. He got stripped in contact in the 22.
Yeah.
There was a lot of errors there. So
even the big break he made, two men into his right. The try under the post, an extra 2 points. Ross Byrne missed the conversion. I feel like those big breaks he makes are almost never actually converted into a score. They look great on GIFs on Twitter, but like, I know they subsequently scored in the corner and missed that conversion, but that had two men inside him. Gibson Park running that line side. I was at a point of the fact that I feel like for all the great breaks he makes, there's not a whole pile of show for
him. And he said himself that when he takes off, and Andy Farrell said it during the Six Nations, was it? That when he takes off, I don't even think he knows where he's going. And there is definitely an element of that where he's got to be better at linking his players. But Leinster went 37 minutes without scoring, which I also think is a concern. And I was having a look back through it, and in fairness, Opta helped me out with it. That was the eighth game this season that Leinster have gone 36 minutes or more without scoring. Now, there's caveats to that, because the two of them are the two previous games in South Africa, which it took to the... But there was a similar issue against Munster, Connacht and Ulster earlier this season, which are certainly what you would class big games. So I don't know if you can afford to go 36 minutes plus without scoring in a
not
final
against
Toulouse.
No,
this is what I mean. Yeah. Because Toulouse are going to score tries in that final. It's just, you can bet your house in it. But Leinster are going to have to score as well. And that is, I don't know, I'd be curious to get you guys' thoughts. Is that a sort of a payoff or a knock-on effect for the amount of focus, do you think, that they've put on the defence this season, where maybe the attack hasn't quite been as good this season?
The thought has occurred to me as well. That's interesting that you mentioned that too. You know, I think it is difficult to know. You know, like when a team puts a focus on something, and in fairness, like it might, like if you watch the Quins Toulouse match, and I'm sure we're going to cover that in a bit more detail anyway, but Quins can't defend. Like, they can't. They are, I mean, Toulouse are great.
They're missing Jerry Flannery.
They can't defend. Like, they're awful in defence. So, you know, it will be a tighter occasion. I think Leinster were able to keep La Rochelle fairly well marshalled, I think, for large periods of the game. And they were actually really good against Northampton. Northampton could not catch a cold in the first half. But Leinster's defence was fairly smothering as well. And it was fairly smothering against La Rochelle. So, interesting to see if, look, they mightn't get the job done by by the kind of attack that we've kind of always kind of, I suppose, associated with this Leinster team. But they might get it, if they can marry the two a little bit, that defensive kind of, you know, press for a little bit longer in the game. I think they'll be able to do that if they play more rugby together over the next couple of weeks. But if they can do that with a little bit of improvement in the attack, I do think that's more of a formula or a recipe to beat Toulouse. I think you can't just go for a cricket score against kind of match against, or sorry, a basketball score against Toulouse.
Which is
like Harlequins were always going to be going that direction. Leinster shouldn't do that because they have the ability to shut them down. They have a strong bench with a 6-2. So you can kind of burn a few forwards in a kind of fairly hard, aggressive defensive performance and still keep a couple of guys fresh if you bring them off the bench well. So I think you're right. It's interesting you say it because I have been kind of thinking, I wonder is it difficult to kind of have the focus on the two things and deliver on the two things. But I still think you should be able to do it in one or two of the games this season. We haven't seen them marry both, I don't think.
Well, it's a point we've been raising for the majority of the season. Is Leinster's like chance conversion has been different.
I think they were lucky on the Gibbs. Do you know the tap for Gibson Park? So do you know when Doris goes over the line, Will? I think he's held up there. Do you know what we even talk about? I think he's held. No, he throws a bit of a Hail Mary out there because I think he knows he's stuck.
He offloaded the ball immediately.
It looked to me like he was kind of stuck and he just throws one. Like, sorry, if it's an offload, it's a terrible offload because it's a brilliant piece of skill by Gibson Park.
Well, look, he popped it up.
Like, it's an
I'd be inclined to give him the benefit of the
doubt. I know he's trying to get it out, but I think he's stuck if he doesn't get the ball out. I think he's held up over the line.
Potentially.
Do you know, we've been talking about that a lot, Will.
Because, like, Northampton only scored 17 points. So, like, for all the talk of that performance, it was really missing 7 points off the tee, including one in front of the post, you know, Baird getting stripped in the 22, Van der Fleer knocking on just before half time. Like, Leinster didn't take their chances. Like, they only conceded 17 points. Leinster should win every single game they play if they can only concede 17 points. They'll win against Toulouse if they only concede 17. I still just think they're not being as ruthless enough. Then they were against La Rochelle. That's the one performance when I thought they really did take their chances, bar a couple maybe in the first half at times. In the second half in particular, they were really ruthless. I think we need to rediscover that edge when they get into the scoring zone.
I agree with you. I think they're overly reliant on a couple of different things when it comes to their attack. I think they're almost too reliant on set piece in terms of strike moves. You think back to even the final last year and Andrew Goodman came up with a couple of absolute gems. I'm not sure their phase attack is as good when they're in phase attack. I think Stuart Lancaster's influence around there, I think you're
really Sexton too.
I was just going to come to that. Obviously, you're missing Johnny Sexton. Didn't play for a lot of last season, but I think now the attack goes through Gibson Park as opposed to going through the 10, which it used to do. If you take Gibson Park out of that Leinster team, I would have serious concerns about the attack.
Which they didn't on Saturday.
This is the point, you know, that Luke McGrath stayed on the bench. Harry Byrne would have stayed on the bench, but for Kieran Frawley's injury late on. And look, as well as Gibson Park is playing, and he was, like, for the most part, absolutely outstanding, but I would have serious concerns if he doesn't play, what happens to Leinster's attack? Because I think it's shifted. It's almost like the French way of playing. It's similar enough to DuPont, really, at Toulouse, that a lot of things go through the scrum half, which, look, it's fine. Like, both things can work. But, that to me would be a bit of a concern, I have to say.
I think they were at their best as well when they started being direct. That's when they started getting some pay in the first half. They had a lot of kind of messy bits. And I think Ireland can have the same issue as well. They can end up kind of falling in over, going kind of wide. Whereas I think they've, you know, a real strength of the team is not necessarily that ball carrier behind, like, so your Ross Byrne or your Sexton, of course, because he was just so good at making decisions there, and really quick ones or late ones as the case may be. But I think they've gone a little bit away from that, the forward interplay. That's something that's been a real strength for the team, but they're very direct when they do it and it's very hard to stop. I haven't seen as many Leinster forwards go through gaps this year as I have in previous years when I feel like their attack is really humming. So that's something that maybe I wonder, you know, is there something there? Is there something that they'll say, well, where do we get pay in the game? My good feeling on it was that once they started actually going at Northampton in the tight, I thought that's when they started opening them up. And I always think that's when Leinster are at their best, is when the forwards are getting on the ball and interplaying amongst themselves, and they're not just throwing every single one out the back. I think with the quality they have and the quality they'll have on the bench against Toulouse, you can't just avoid that area because they're big men. You need to try and expose it there. And I think when they're doing their best against La Rochelle and the big teams, and I include Ireland in this because, in fairness, it's a lot of the same personnel, I think that's when they play their best rugby and they're at their most dangerous.
What are some of the positives? Because obviously they did win. Like we're kind of, we are.
That's the positive, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's the only positive. Because, like, you know, to be fair, like coming out of the ground, a lot of people were having kind of a more of a glass half empty kind of reaction to it, just given the lead they had and how the game finished. But they ultimately, they are into the, another final, three in a row, the fourth team in the history of the Champions Cup to make three finals in a row. Like, I know I have a few things written in. Like, Jamie Osborne, I thought was brilliant again. Like, it's funny, like, Gary Ringo seems to be of the key three, the first man back. And he's probably the one you could probably say, well, given how good Osborne is playing, you'd much rather maybe James Ryan or Hugo Keenan fit. You know, I thought Tyke Furlong had an excellent game. Like, that moment on the big screen when he was really kind of leading into, like, GA player celebrating winning a free territory. I thought that really
had that vibe. Yeah,
he's from Wexford.
Oh, well, I saw someone sharing the clip of him playing.
Yeah, he's great, he barrels
into someone. Like, it's classic shoulder to shoulder. So they were two players who stood out to me, like, because ultimately Leinster did build the winning score. First 50 minutes, they were absolutely dominant, aided by, we said, 9 Northampton knock-ons in the first kind of 25 minutes.
Were they deer in headlights to you? I think they were deer in headlights.
From a Leinster perspective, what would you look at and say, okay, this is what they can build on from Saturday to the final?
I totally agree with what Luke was saying, and I remember tweeting it at the time that it was so noticeable how dominant Leinster were in contact in that first half. I already mentioned Josh van der Fleer. I thought Joe McCarthy was exceptional. Every time he got the ball, he was hammering over the
some
game.
Good lines as well.
Like really good lines. Oh, Caelan Dorris was excellent as well. So their work in contact, I thought, was excellent. It was just like it was how they went away from that. And I think you do have to give credit to Northampton in the second half in how they fronted up. I agree with you. I think they were, look, their first half an hour, they'll have major regrets about how poor they were.
Cold. Like, unbelievable.
And then you see them in the second half, how good they were. So I think we've got to give credit to Northampton for fighting back. They are top of the Premiership for a reason. They're a really good team. It's a pity they're kind of being broken up a little bit next season with the likes of Ludlam and Laws. Laws was exceptional, by the way. Again, so I thought that was an obvious one to be positive. I thought their defence, again, in that first 45 minutes, whatever you want to say, was outstanding. I mean, it really did shut Northampton down. The only time they did get through them was the break down the right flank, which if that pass goes to hand, like I said, I think you're looking at a different game. I thought how they managed the end game was interesting. I was kind of thinking back to Twickenham, actually. They went through, was it 17 phases? Now, they were obviously in the Northampton 22, but they don't protect. And maybe this is the touches on the point that you were making, Luke, in terms of guys ruck inspecting, because Gibson Park gets snagged by Courtney Laws and all of a sudden then they break down the right and you're going, oh my God, here we go. So, like Conor Murray got a lot of criticism for, you know, kicking away the ball in Twickenham that time, but I was that thought did come to my mind. Like, Leinster went through 17 phases, but that's the risk that you're running. And if Northampton had gone and scored a try, then people are going, you should have managed it better. So I also thought Caelan Dorris and Jack Conan's match winning turnover, if you want to call it that, was a piece of unbelievable skill, but also courage to have the balls to go for that. Because if that is a penalty, and Reynal was like ropey enough around the breakdown, I know like Leinster seemed to...
I thought he was very harsh Northampton throughout. I thought the first half that he didn't give them much. I thought there was a few really marginal ones, and I thought the ruck was a bit of a mess in the first half, I think.
It was.
But Leinster got away with a good bit in the first half.
That's why, like, because it, like, even though Leinster, if you're going to want to say they got the rub of the green, it's still massively rich. Risk or reward to go for that poach, because if they concede a penalty,
extra time.
It's extra time. And
who was going to win that?
Finn Smith had kicked like a dream, in comparison to Ross Byrne. So he knocks over that. But it was unbelievable bravery and courage and all that kind of stuff, but also skill to turn it over. And obviously they saw it out. So I think they will take confidence from the fact that they didn't bottle it in the end. They did have the wherewithal to see it out, but it was firm.
I don't think you could call that not a bottle.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be describing it as that.
They didn't bottle it. They didn't.
Well, they really threw it away.
They were absolutely...
I don't think you
could
say they didn't bottle it. Like, they didn't... I thought they kind of... as I said, I think the coaching staff have something to answer for in terms of not playing the guys. They were bubble wrapped and they looked like they were coming out of the, you know, out of the plastic container. The cryo chamber, haven't been rested for a couple
Toy
of weeks.
Story or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Buzz Lightyear.
that was kind of what I they looked like, look, pristine shape, but you've been in the gym, but you haven't played a rugby match in like 2.5-3 weeks. So they looked a bit like that at the end of the game. And I think, leaving that aside, I think they did, they should have still won the game comfortably without playing well, even if they had it that bad last 30 minutes that they had. they had enough opportunities within at the start of the second half and throughout the first half that they should have been in a better position because they were way on top, and Northampton got off to an absolute stinker. They looked like, to me, the occasion completely got the better of most of their players. They looked like a team who hadn't played in the stadium like that and hadn't played in a game that big for the club. You know, because they just couldn't hold on to the ball. You know, the kind of basics of the game kind of just completely, eluded them at that point. And that can happen in big games. I don't think I could describe the game that way. I just feel like because they didn't close it off and put themselves in, like Toulouse didn't play well and they look like they don't look that fit to me, but they were still, they were far enough. They had enough kind of, I thought, towards the end of the game and in key parts of the game.
Northampton are better than Quinns is the only thing I would say. They're definitely a better team than Quinns.
Well, they can defend at least. Yeah, the others can't defend at all. But like, I don't know. It just felt like the Leinster looked very nervy. They looked shaky. People left the stadium with that feeling in their stomach because that was, I feel like it was probably accurate. Sometimes you have to go with your gut feeling at the time. When the game finished on the weekend, I was like, poof, thank God we got away with that one. On a serious note, I felt like we got away with one.
I do think, like, Byrne missing the kick dead straight in front, I think that's when the game did shift. I think up to that point, even though I think Northampton had scored a try at that stage, so there was 10 points in it. But it was once the Byrne kick went, I think, did this seem to be amongst the players? That's when they started kicking more. And I know you think it was down to fatigue or their lack of match sharpness, but I do think there's a mental... I've definitely always stressed the mental side, in my opinion, to Leinster's, you know, failings in the last couple of years versus how much they've played or the tactics. I do think every defeat has made, every time they've gotten close to another defeat, weigh on them like a grand piano. Like, they would have had to have been thinking in the end game there,
not again.
Oh my God, we've lost two finals. Now we're going to lose to effing Northampton in Croke Park after leading by 17. They'd only be human to think that. So, like, I am intrigued to see going into this final, like, you have the baggage of Leinster's, you know, a jumbo jet amount of baggage. But Toulouse have lost two semi-finals in a row heavily to Leinster. So DuPont was actually, you know, flying a few kites. Now, it is translated from French to English, so it sounds like he's unbelievably well-spoken, and that's how he's actually saying it in French. But like he was saying, well, like, you know, they've beaten us, but they haven't won either any finals either, so it's hard to know who's actually coming into it. You know,
And they've beaten La Rochelle in, you know, every chance they've got as well, you know what I mean, in the Bouclier and stuff, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, they seem to have, you know, we've always talked about that kind of those three teams, you know, having been, you know, clearly ahead of the rest of the competition at the moment. But Toulouse have La Rochelle's number. It's only this year that Leinster have really figured something out about La Rochelle or figured something out about themselves, whatever it is, but have gotten over that hump. So I wonder now, will Toulouse have, you know, kind of had the Leinster kind of thing where they've kind of gone, okay, what happened the last couple of years? I think there was a little bit of tiredness definitely for one after the Munster game. I think, you know, Leinster did, you know, they really took them apart that day, but they looked, haven't played the extra time against Munster, they looked exhausted that day, I think. So I expect them to have a better showing. I would say, I think if Leinster play their players and they get match fit, I don't think Leinster have anything to fear from them in the final. I think Leinster should have enough. I think their defence has improved enough to go ahead and beat them. It doesn't mean that, you know, they're easy to contain or they won't be a nightmare at kind of set piece and DuPont isn't going to cause you trouble at different periods. But I think Ireland have kind of had France's measure too. And I think there's a little bit in that. I think the Leinster players will take a little bit of confidence from the last couple of outings. And I think, you know, if they get it right, if they get the fitness levels right, I think they should be able to beat them. Like, I was very concerned if I was a Toulouse supporter that kind of 50 to 65 minutes period where Harlequins were getting on top. One of the tries that Tyrone, I can't remember his second name.
Tyrone Green.
Sorry, Tyrone is the thing that sticks out in my head. It's such an unusual name. But he... when he goes through from that long kick, there's an ocean. It was like the Red Sea in front of him. Now, he gets an unbelievable offload away. It's an unbelievable offload, but there is no one in front of him. And once that ruck forms, he's the guy that he's there ahead of any other Toulouse player that's on the other side of that pitch. It should have been trucking across. He goes through. Now, he times the run beautifully I think it was Danny Kerr was still on the pitch at that stage. Beautiful pass. But that tells me something about Toulouse. Like, when the game was kind of getting a little bit edgy, they couldn't muster the big guys couldn't get moving from across the pitch.
That was a hallmark of Leinster's two semi-final victories. I know you say they were tired one week, but like, as the game wore on, Leinster just put more and more scores on them because Leinster did look the fitter team. I think Leinster put 40 points on them both years, and they also hammered them in 2019. So three of the last 5 years, now they were at the Aviva Stadium, but there did seem to be a gap in fitness. I see even people like look at their second row and say, oh, like Emmanuel Miafu, he's like Will Skelton. Skelton is a lot fitter than Emmanuel Miafu. like under Rod, Skelton's gotten a lot fitter and a lot more impactful across 80 minutes. Like in the Aviva Stadium last year, Skelton was making impactful plays.
He was the key guy for the last...
Until the end of the game, whereas Miafu against Leinster, I don't think he's been very impactful. He's obviously a very physical
player. He looks
player.
A bit sloppy with penalties. I think he's the different player. Skelton, I think, is way better.
So do I, but I just people, obviously, similar physical profile, but I don't think anywhere near as effective. And I don't think even in the power game, like, I feel like Antonio Bocci and Skelton are more powerful than almost any other Toulouse player that they have in terms of the makeup. I just don't
They're
think...
savages, yeah.
I just think Leinster match up pretty well with Toulouse in that regard.
The one thing I would say as well is, like, Entomac coming back will play a part. Like, he is still a bit of a Rolls-Royce of a player, isn't he?
Some he looks like he's never been away, actually.
He and looks class.
It's a reminder of how much France missed him at the World Cup as well. Like, they really did. But neutral ground is a huge leveller, I would say. These games you're talking about were at the Aviva Stadium where Leinster are so comfortable.
It'll be quick, though. It'll be quick
there. It will be quick, yeah. But think back to moving DuPont last season as well, which was an absolute disaster show for Toulouse. Yeah. That's not going to happen again. It was bad coaching, yeah. So I don't see that happening again. I think this Toulouse team are so dangerous, I have to be honest, in terms of going
if they pick Ramos as well, like they'll get all the
picks. They have to pick Ramos.
Pick him there,
As well as Blair Kinghorn has done in a final, and I was shocked they didn't pick him in a semi-final because Blair Kinghorn...
a lot of points out there after
The thing. So, like, I think you have to have him, your team. I think your man Paul Coss in the centre looks like he could be...
Terrible tackle by Smith, though. He shouldn't have got through on that one. Like, that was a one-on-one, complete panic stations, overruns. It's like, I mean, if you do any of your homework as well, you know he's got that right foot step. Mm-hmm. Like, that would have hurt me badly. It would have hurt the team at a crucial juncture. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as we, like, I have to say, he's gone up in my estimations, Marcus Smith, this last year, I think he's definitely stepped it up. But still, small man in a big game. You know, they let you down every now and then. Like, and he should have made that tackle. You know, that was a bad one to miss. And that kind of put the nail in the coffin, really, for the most, well, we thought so. For Quinns in that first half, you know. So, but your man is a great player. Like, he's a big threat.
He looks like he could be in the French centre for the next.
Do you think the guys will marshal him well, though? I think if it's Henshaw and Ringrose, Osborne's very good too, but I think Ringrose has to come back in the team.
It sounds like Ringrose, and now they've been saying this for the last couple of weeks, but it really does sound like that he might play this weekend. So, whether that's from the start, off the bench, I'm not sure about James Ryan. I sat down with him for a one on one interview a couple of weeks ago, and look, and he did say that it was touch and go for the La Rochelle game, and my reading into that was that he probably wasn't going to be playing. Sorry, not for the La Rochelle game, for the game just gone against Northampton. He did say he's hoping to be back before the end of the season, and obviously Hugo Keenan, we kind of touched on it there, but I think Leinster lack pace in that back three. Jameson Gibson-Park saved their bacon as well with that. He's unbelievable at making those last stitch covers. He did it against Leicester.
Sleeping. I thought his pace got him out of trouble. He was sleeping there. Oh, yeah, he was sleeping there. Way too late.
Frawley looked like he was running in quicksand when he was.
Sure, once you go up, was that in that defensive system? No, that was you're right. He recovered unbelievably quickly.
Yeah,
but that was a bad. He went to sleep for a second.
But to me, Frawley lacked space to be a 15, and I think we saw Dylan Lades went past him in the quarterfinal as well. And look, Keenan, for all he does, the reading of the game, but the knock-on effect that if you could get even two of the three guys back is that you can do more with the bench, because I'd be shocked if Leinster don't go back to the 6-2 split. Will Connors, you talk about keeping guys in cryo chambers in cold storage. Will Connors is, and I think we should talk about this, is like a really... He's put himself in a tricky position, like, and he just signed a contract extension this season in that he's become this, like, kind of, you know, his USP is obviously chop tackling, but to have played, and I thought he played very well in the quarterfinal, and he was a nuisance around the breakdown as well, did a lot more stuff than just chop tackling, but to then not feature at all in the 23 when he's fit, I don't know why he didn't go to South Africa either, I have to say. I think he could have done with the game time, but he finds himself in an unusual situation now, doesn't he?
Deegan signing today, I'm like, what is going... Why?
Yeah. Why? Especially because it was floated over the weekend that he'd be off to Ulster.
My understanding is that Max Deegan signed his contract in November. So
that exclusive
was not, and look, it happens to the best of us, but yeah, I think Leinster were having a really good chuckle at that, and
they had a funny tweet about it. It was like exclusive
seemingly he signed his contract back in November, which, as you know, Luke,
why would he be signing another contract there?
Yeah, sorry, can we just go back
sorry,
to
yeah, go on,
sorry,
yeah,
we,
yeah.
We should talk with Deacon, but yeah. Just on Will Connors, like, there's a good chance he might be brought back for the Toulouse
it's
game because
same remit as La Rochelle.
That would mean he's only played three games in the Champions Cup, two against La Rochelle for, I think they were both 50 minutes.
Was he injured for a little bit after La Rochelle? No?
No.
Not at all. So he just hasn't played at all.
He played
the other six or the other Dragons URC away. Matches around that time, like in the Six Nations and stuff.
So he finds himself almost caught between.
But is that not exactly what Neen Aber was doing with Rossi at the World Cup in terms
role
of
players?
Just picking guys for specific roles, changing things up massively from game to game. You know, keeping the opposition guessing and just really saying, okay, this guy is starting for this game, and then he might not be in the 23 for another game.
Alex Ferguson still, maybe.
Or just that's kind of how the Springboks were selecting their team at the World Cup.
You can understand the logic, but if I was Will Connors, I'm banging on Neen Aber and Leo Cullen's door, saying like, I can do other things, not just chop tackle. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think in the midst of all this, Josh Van der Veer is playing outstanding. I think he's very much back to his best form. But
when you go 5-3, it's hard to.
Will Connors isn't even.
Like Conan is definitely going to be
Cullen's absolutely there, yeah. But even if they had went 6-2, and that's a fair point, Will, if they had went 6-2 at the weekend, I'm not sure if Will Connors is the type of player you bring off the bench. I think you want him more starting and bring the energy of Josh Van der Veer, who does offer you more around the pitch.
The only thing is though, there's
at the weekend he would have been good off the bench because Northampton were in the ascendancy. Obviously when they picked the team, they probably thought they would be the ones who would be pushing
on turnovers. Yep. They breed life back into when you're struggling, a big tackle somewhere. I'm less convinced about that. I think I'd rather have like a fresh person in that position for Eddie. I see the point though. It's hard to know.
It's just an unusual. Like I feel sorry for him almost in a way that he's not getting.
He's found himself in that position. I'd say he's just happy to be playing some rugby.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
But I think if he was looking at it coldly and saying, "Okay, well, how do I get back in this Irish team?" Where does he go? Because if you're getting kind of bit parts and certain games, like I don't think Farrell selects like that. He just doesn't do. I think Farrell likes guys.
I was going to ask you that
time.
Actually. Do you think that because of how well he played in both games against La Rochelle, if he potentially plays against Toulouse and plays well like South Africa, you'd be thinking are the exact same profile, but do you think Andy Farrell has been a big fan, to be fair, of Will Connors? He gave
him
his debut
as
well,
so
it's just a curious case for such a good player that he doesn't play. I mean, if he was like playing in a lot of other teams, he'd be first names in teams. He's just a curious one.
I'll tell you what, you know what would be big for Leinster now? I know I'm kind of going off a little bit, just I have to say it before we move on. I felt like you were moving on for something else there, Will.
I think
Ryan is the key guy for them. I think he is I think people really underestimate how important he is to Ireland and to Leinster.
I've always agreed with you, by the way.
I think he is, completely underappreciated. I think if he was to get back, it would give me way more confidence, I think, than any other player. Keenan would be great, but I think there's enough threat there. I think Jimmy O'Brien comes in there somewhere possibly for them. I have to think that he'll, over the next couple of weeks, if they give him a few chances, the way he played before he finished up, there has to be a place for him somewhere there. Whether you put Larmer back there and put him on the wing or O'Brien at full back, I just have to feel like there's something there. And I think Ringrose will definitely be back. I'm not even sure that's up for debate probably at this stage, unless he's had a setback that we don't know about. But Ryan, if they get him back, he's the key guy for me in this Leinster pack. I think he makes them hum, and he's the guy that I think that the work he gets through, but it's the quality of work he gets through. I think it's kind of unseen work. Like he's really, those rooks, Leinster are really humming in there. Like you feel like there's options everywhere, and this momentum is just kind of unstoppable. I think he's a key guy in all that. I think the way he rooks and the way he cleans out bodies is really underappreciated of all the skills he has. So yeah, we're watching that space quite closely for the final, I think.
Yeah, well, you've said it before, but his first 25 minutes against La Rochelle in the Aviva last,
one of the best performances I've ever seen in the blue jersey.
Crushed Will Skelton in a big hit and
over there this season as well.
Yeah, he was brilliant. Unbelievable.
I just find it hard to see a man who had such a large cast on his arm 3 or 4 weeks ago. It literally looked like the Michelin man.
I asked him about that, and he said like he was getting awful stick from the lads.
Bionic arm.
He said it made it look far worse. Now I'm sure ripping your bicep is sore enough, but look, he's optimistic that he will be back, and I agree with you, he'd make a huge difference.
Well, it'll be great to build up to Leinster too, so for the next couple of weeks, but we have two really exciting weekends of URC action, which we don't always say that, but the playoff positions are really coming into a lot of drama. But big kind of blow for Ulster and Connacht in particular. The Sharks winning at the weekend, they were being 13 points down. They came back to win by one. If they win the Challenge
Cup, kick at the end was unreal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Claremont, it went full Claremont on it.
Yeah.
I was thinking of you as I was watching.
Yeah, Brock James is long gone, but the spirit lives on. I know. Claremont just can't get out of their own way sometimes when it comes to European knockout games. But for the Sharks, if they beat Gloucester, that means they take one of the eight places. So if Ulster or Connacht finish eight, they won't get into the Champions Cup. So, like, you know, this weekend we've Scarlets, Ulster, Munster, Connacht in the derby, and then Leinster Ospreys. Suppose the big intrigue there is what team they might pick, given, you know, what Leo Cullen said. But, you know, I want to talk about Connacht because we did get a tweet last week that we didn't touch on them, and sometimes it can be hard to squeeze everything into the 1 hour. You know, they had a couple of bad results. They bounced back with two, I think, bonus point wins back to back against the Dragons and Zebras, which you would have expected. Now they have Munster away, Stormers home, Leinster away. Especially with that Sharks piece, you know, maybe taking the eighth spot, do you think there's a pathway to them getting into the top seven or the top eight?
Oh, it's going to be tough. And I don't know if you saw the latest injury news out of Connacht.
JJ Hanrahan
did his ACL. His Achilles.
ACL's better than Achilles.
So that's a long time out. Kean Prendergast is out this weekend. Dennis Buckley is out this weekend. I know they had hoped to have Mac Hansen back. This was the game that they had targeted. He's not going to be back. That's a lot of quality that you're taking out of a team to play Munster, who, like Connacht, have had a week off to refresh, and they're going to be bouncing into this game on the back of what they did in South Africa. So I would fear for Connacht, particularly off the back of the Sharks winning, because I think the Sharks will be Gloucester in that.
Your team,
I know.
How are you behind Cardiff and Ospreys?
They're still so loose, though. They're so loose still. But Gloucester, in fairness, have turned around what looked like a really sinking ship season, but I'd fully expect the Sharks to win. Connacht season has been interesting, because at the start of it I thought they handled kind of the changeover from the Andy Friend era really well. They started the season well, but they've been, I mentioned the Sharks being loose in defence. Connacht is it's a big issue for them. Scott Fardy has come in there, and I'm not quite sure if they're still up to speed with what he's looking for from his players, but that is a big concern that I would have for Connacht, because look, we've spent so much time talking about Leinster's defence and how good it was for large parts of the game last weekend. But Connacht concede tries, I think, far too easily. And against an attack like Munster, like I said, which will be full of confidence after their previous couple of results over in South Africa, I think this weekend is going to be a really tough game for them. Jack Harty is fit, which is massive on the back of JJ Hanrahan going to be ruled out for so long. But Jack Harty hasn't played in quite a while. I think there's a lot of pressure on him now to come in and hit the ground running, because, like, there's a lot of good things happening in Connacht. They're producing a lot of exciting young guys. Matthew Devine coming through. It's great to see him finally coming through. He's been brilliant over the last couple of games. They're obviously redoing the Dexcom Stadium, is that what we call it now, which is massive again for Connacht. But you want to see them in the Champions Cup. I know they had a tough campaign this year, but like, it's important, isn't it, to get bums on seats to try and, you know, end up help to pay for this stadium, to try and attract players. Sandy Cordero could be back before the end of the season, which would be a big boost. They've been really unlucky. I mean, he got injured basically soon after he arrived. So there's a lot of good things happening in Connacht, but they just still haven't figured out the defence, and the fact we're still having these issues at this stage of the season would make me worry about their qualification.
And just the fixture list is an absolute gauntlet. Like, you know, your only home game left is the Stormers, who are like that. This is their one tournament they'll be focusing on. They'll have all their big guns.
They did, yeah. They named their squad today, yeah.
Oh, already?
Yeah.
2 weeks in advance. So, like, it's, I don't see a pathway really for them to qualify personally.
Unless they get some unbelievably bad weather for that Stormers match. No, look, it's looking tricky for them, you know, and their squad is always a little bit skinnier, you know, just budget constraints. You know, so they don't really wear the injuries as well as other teams will, you know. And I think, like, there's only so much a defence coach, you know, they're all saying mostly the same things. Like, it's a squad spirit that you need, and you need, you know, you need your big players as well. I think that's kind of important, that you have your big physical players there who are used to playing in faster, more physical, you know, games where it requires, you know, quicker decisions and it's harder to perform in. You know, when they come down to play a league match, they have a massive impact on the rest of the players around them, whether it's good information or just good positions that they take up. So having good big players out at this time of the season is not helpful. And I think for the squad spirit as well, those guys are even more important down in Connacht than they are would be in any other club. So, and that probably tells you a big story about why maybe the defence hasn't been as good this year. Aside from obviously some changeover, you know, the coach will always take a bit of the brunt. But knowing Fardy a little bit, I just can't see him. He's a smart guy too. He's nice. You'd want to play for him too as well. He's like a tough guy. So I feel that's probably more a player issue. Maybe I'm sure there's a bit of shared blame somewhere, but it's a combination of factors. But I just can't see getting them over the line. You know, it's been poor all year. They're not going to fix it now, I don't think. Or if they do, it'll be a bit of a miracle. So not looking so good for them. And look, I think Munster as well, they look like they're playing some lovely rugby, like really coming into form again, similar to last season. Guys look battle hardened. Guys look like they've kind of figured each other out. I think they've key people back. Probably a happy camp as well with O'Mahony, all this kind of stuff kind of getting boxed off.
Simon is fit and playing well. Makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does make a big difference. I think, you know, Rhodes goes on and on about him, and I always think he's overrated, but I'm not so sure anymore. I think he's playing unbelievable, isn't he? And like that offloading ability. You know, Munster just don't have as many of the weapons that, say, some of the bigger packs have, I think, you know, in terms of ball-carrying ability and power. He fills the void a bit there, doesn't he?
And you were talking about people in cryotherapy chambers. He's the leader house wearing a mask. No, you don't want to get another bug, an ill-time bug, and God knows what will happen. Because he is, he is, you know, sometimes you say, oh, he's been one of the worst signings ever because of his just lack of availability. But when he's actually played, he's been brilliant.
And he did help them win the URC last season, as in towards the tail end when he was fit. He did make a difference. I saw he was up for media today, actually, and I was reading a few of his quotes, you know, saying that it's just obviously a strange scenario. He knows he's going to Leinster, but that, you know, he wants to leave in a high. And sometimes you can read that and go, of course he's going to say that. But honestly, like anyone who you speak to Munster in terms of in and around the squad would tell you that, like, he's been amazing behind the scenes all the time, all the while he was injured. Of course, like, he didn't want to be missing this much action, but the positive influence that he's had, not just on the younger players, but, like, you know, helping out the coaches in meetings and stuff like that. And look, of course, he would have wanted to play longer, but that's all I think you can ask for a guy who unfortunately had back-to-back ACL injuries. So I think when he leaves, like, the form that he's showing at the moment is the form that everyone knows he's capable of. You saw him at the World Cup, how important he is. And you just know he's going to go to Leinster.
He's going to be unbelievable next year.
Unbelievable, of course he is.
Every game.
But I don't think he will leave like Munster. Like, I don't think people will be grudging him, you know what I mean? It was a strange scenario that they ended up in. And look, Munster were right to pick John Cline because you just can't rely on Orji Snyman staying fit. And the irony is that John Cline has barely played this season due to injury, whereas last season he hardly missed a game. So he makes a big difference, but I do think he will leave mostly fondly remembered, I have to say, by Munster supporters.
You think so?
I think
supporters
so.
Supporters or players?
Sorry.
Players, probably.
Players more so, but supporters, yeah. I think, will understand that he wasn't over here as a mercenary just happy to pick up his paycheck, you know what I mean? He did have a fire pit accident. He had the back-to-back ACL injury.
Fire pit accident. I forgot.
You know what I mean?
That, a bad bug. Fire pit one is tough.
Talk
about like an unlucky stint.
This is
Paris.
What I mean. What I mean is I think supporters will be understanding of that rather than a guy coming over just being happy to take a paycheck, like not integrating with the squad and stuff like that. I think the positive.
He did say he did help online. Didn't he help online?
Massive. Yeah.
So yeah, like, and you try and help where you can. The key point in that is no player would ever come over and want to have had that happen to them, you know. Two really serious injuries in a place where you're trying to, you would have been on big money. Like, you're, no matter what, no matter who you are, if you're on big money, I think most people who are professionals want to feel like people,
you're earning it.
Yeah, like you're earning it, like you've done what you're contributing, you know. Look, even for yourself personally, regardless of what other people think, you want to say, well, you know, they've put a lot of time, a lot of effort and a lot of finances behind me here. I want to deliver something. So look, if they were to go get a league and he's kind of a key guy at the end, like, you couldn't look at those 2 years and say, as you say, he did have a bit of an impact last year. I think Cline was the more defining factor, really, but you know, I still think you're right, he had a bit of an impact last year, and if you could get them over the line with some really good rugby that he's playing at the moment, I think he'd all be forgiven. And they know that, in fairness, like, most of the ire is directed towards the IRFU in this, not necessarily the player himself, who probably would have stayed for an extra year or two, probably,
Himself and his wife are delighted in Limerick. I mean,
So Munster kind of got Saturday evening. Scarlet Ulsters, I think, the 3 o'clock kickoff, and, you know, huge game for them. They have, what is it, they have Leinster at home the following weekend, then a week off with the Champions Cup final, and they go to Munster as well. So they have a tough run. So this is the game they really need to be winning. And, you know, we touched on Max Deegan briefly earlier, but it looked like like, oh yeah, the Richie Murphy effect. He's you know, convinced someone to come up the road. As he said, as it turns out, Deegan signed a contract 6 months. Like, Dan McFarlane was still the coach. Yeah. Like, so, but it was funny because like for a moment it did look like, oh, great signing, like the, exactly what they need to get in. And then I'd say Ulster fans just feel like they can't catch a break with something like
it's
that.
Like the, when Wesley Schneider was always linked to Man United and it never happened. But I feel like Luke has probably more to say on Max Deegan staying at Leinster than I do.
I found it bizarre. Yeah, I think he's a really, really good player. And I think he's behind some like really, really good players too, but they're more established and they've done more things that, you know, at international level. One of them is a Lion.
Another future Lion in waiting.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't see where he plays. And off the back of that, like, I think his argument has always been that if I play for Leinster, if I can get into the Leinster team, I'll get into the Irish team. But I just think it's so far away. Like, you're relying on so many other factors outside of your own. And you'd have to have very serious injuries for a long period of time to two of those guys at the same time to get into the team and play. Like, because like the only way you're going to get into the Irish team really is if you're being picked in the Champions Cup games. And I just don't see the way they bubble wrap the guys where they're going to have two guys injured out of those two eights. It's just it'd be unlucky because they don't, like, one of them doesn't play that many minutes by virtue, just because, you know, Dars is pretty much starting all the time. So it seems to me like Conan seems to get, you know, 30 minutes here. He might play an odd game here or there, but, you know, they're duking it out, those two. Deegan isn't even in the conversation. It's like Scott Penny to me. I just find it bizarre that they want to stay. But look, it's because they've got a brilliant setup there. It's because they enjoy going into work every day. But I'd still rather be playing games. Am I losing my mind here? Am I crazy?
Deegan is further away from getting into the Leinster team now than he was 5 years ago.
And like, he's,
I think he started in the 2019-20 season, Leinster's big French away game in the six-match pool stage last year. The old system was away to Lyon. I think he started that game and scored a try. And you're thinking,
I've got Culhan coming through as well.
I was just going to say that his issue over the next couple of years, everything you hear about James Culhan, and he was brilliant for the 20s, but everything you hear about him since he's gone into the senior Leinster setup is this guy is coming through fast, so he could get overtaken by him. Look, to play, I agree with you. I would prefer to see a guy like that, because we've no idea how good Max Deegan actually is, because he doesn't get to play in big games consistently enough. But just to play devil's advocate, like, we don't know the reasons why a guy, you know, maybe he doesn't want to leave Dublin, family, friends and all that, but also he might look at other guys who've gone to places like Ulster and Connacht and haven't really pulled up trees, you'd say. Like, maybe they're, like, I'm thinking of someone like Geordie Murphy, who went up to Ulster and never played for Ireland again, despite the fact that
he got Munster. Pete's got one more year there.
Gavin Coombs is
very good, but like you'd be able to share a load with him at least you get, and you're playing in a team that's not in as bad a place. Like Ulster, I get, because Ulster is the obvious one. It's where there's definitely, he would have the biggest impact. He would play week in, week out. But if he went to Munster, he would be in the Jack Conan type scenario to me, and like, you're only one injury away. He can play six as well, which in fairness is very competitive in Munster. I just feel like there's a better situations for him outside. Leinster just looks like he's a good bit down the pecking order to me.
I think Munster, sorry, Will, would say like that Brian Gleeson is
excellent.
He's been very unlucky with injuries this season, but
he's very good.
Sorry, I don't think it's going to be long before Brian Gleeson is in that starting back row.
But Pete is going to be leaving the scene I think most people think it was a tight enough decision this year whether he was possibly going to call it a day or go somewhere else. Like, that's on the horizon though. Like I don't see the same.
Yeah, I don't know. Tom O'Hearn is playing a bit of six as well. I think Munster would probably say that they're happy enough with their, it's the front row that Munster probably need more of an option. But like,
I'm more thinking from an, I have my Irish hat on.
Yeah, and like, the thing is, his Irish chances are seriously hampered by the fact that, like you said, well, he doesn't play in the big games.
The list of players who've actually left Leinster and got better is probably short enough. The list of players who've left Leinster and played for Ireland after doing so is even shorter. So I could see why a player might theoretically say, "What I want."
What age is Deegan? Is Deegan 27, by the way?
28. I think.
Is that kind of, is that still time? And he's got an Irish cap, hasn't he?
You'd imagine he probably signed a 2-year contract.
Surely that's the wrong attitude to have. Like, surely you must think, if I went to Ulster, if I'm as good as I think I am, I'd be like the starting number 8 and I'd be tearing up trees and I could definitely force my way in. But it seems to be the contrary. People are like, as you say, looking at the Geordie Murphy example and a few other examples, and it's like, oh, it hasn't gone well for them. Do I really want to go to a team not playing well and kind of my career is over then? Maybe at least they have the glimmer of hope, as you say, Luke, of if I break into a winning team, I should be in the Ireland team.
So Geordie's 33 now, was he? Is he 33 now? Yeah. Something like that, I think. So Yeah, I suppose he probably did go up.
He has in 2018, so...
Fair enough, similar stage, yeah.
And like, that's just one off the top of my head.
Well, Jordy Murphy went up at the end of the 2018 season. He had just started number 8 in the Champions Cup final and the winning team. Leinster haven't won it since. So he was going actually at a really, what would appear to have been a great time to maybe make the move.
Yeah, got it.
Didn't materialise, so...
Well, I suppose he probably argued that he played some rugby at least, and he mightn't have played that much in that back row. Like, I think Jordy was falling pretty far down the pecking order at that point there, and he was playing. So at least, my one thing is that I would never like to have gone my career without playing and having an opportunity. I feel like you've no opportunity if you're not even playing. You know, that kind of way? Like, at least go, well, look, if it doesn't work out, and it hasn't worked out for a few people, I think Jack McGrath's probably a different because he probably got that bad injury, and I don't think he was ever probably really fit again, you know, or as fit as he was. But I think like Jordy Murphy is probably the obvious one. But John Cooney's revived, you know, his career, like until he had that kind of blow up in the media, was going pretty good. So there is other examples of people going up there. It's a tricky situation to be heading up into there. I just feel like I'd love to say I'm playing 15 or 20 games a season. If it's in a team that's not playing well, at least I gave it a shot. At least I knew that I was going to have that many games. Or I just don't see... Seems to me like you might play 5 or 6 games for Leinster now. Maybe a few more, but I don't know. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no.
Am I crazier?
I think most people would think like that. But you were in like plenty of dressing rooms for long enough. But do you think, and I'm not necessarily saying Max Egan is one of these, but do you think some guys are just happy to be in Leinster, to be playing for Leinster, to be a Leinster player?
Yeah. I do.
You know what I mean? That would be...
I know that, actually.
And I'm not saying it about Max Egan, just to be clear, but my sense from the outside over the years that, you know...
It's a comfortable decision.
I could think of guys in my head right now, and I'm not going to mention him, who I'd be like, could have shown a little bit more ambition in his career, because we never got to find out how good he was because he was happy to be a Leinster player. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you've guys like Andrew Conway who did it. Felix Jones did it.
Tyke Byrne is the prime
example of it, sorry.
But he was let go from Leinster. That's still a little different.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, he was forced to go.
But he could.
Well, Conway's a better example.
Felix
I think.
Jones, yeah, yeah.
Felix Jones. Conway moved.
The Jones as well. Jones was a very similar situation to Conway, where I think he was just on the cusp of kind of breaking into the Leinster team. Played a couple of games. Coaches were upset about those two guys leaving, I think, and they went on to have kind of brilliant careers. You know, Niall Ronan had a pretty good career after. Didn't get the Ireland team, but had a brilliant career. So there is loads of examples of people coming back and forth between the provinces that have done well as well. I think, you know, you have to look at your own personal situation and say, well, like, am I good enough? Do I think, is this what I want? Maybe they don't want it. Maybe the Irish thing isn't that big.
That's just what I mean.
Maybe it's not, that isn't the motivator. Maybe it's, look, I'm at home, I'm getting paid good money. I love coming into work every day. It's a really good squad. I feel like I'm with the best coaches in the country. You know, all I need is one injury and to get on for 20, 30 minutes, you know, tear up trees in that 20, 30 minutes. But I would just feel like the other guys have such a big body of work for the, just Deegan's case, particularly. Like, Conan's been in the team for 10 years. You know, Doris has been in the team probably for 4 or 5 years at this stage. And they've loads, or like, they have to play terrible for a long time to not get picked. And they're too good, I think, to do that. I just think they're always going to get picked ahead of him, no matter how good he plays in a league game or for 20, 30 minutes in a cup game if he gets on. So, he must be happy with the decision. So obviously we're wrong in his eyes, but I'd hate to see his career. I just think he's such a talented guy. He seems like such a talented rugby player to me, you know, like some of the skills on show, he's a brilliant athlete as well. I'm sure he's pretty good in the line out too, because he's so athletic. You just feel like there's a player in there that could have an Irish, like he's got the frame to be an international rugby player, and I think the skills, it's just opportunity, I think, is going to be lacking for him. So yeah,
it's an interesting one, especially when it went from going to Ulster to the contract's been signed for 6 months. But yeah,
maybe they'd loan him out. There should be a bit of David Humphreys has a big job, I think, you know, to try and figure out what some of the resources in Leinster are too good to be sitting there, I think.
Well, just before we finish up, we'll go to the left wing moment of the week in association with Bank of Ireland. My moment of the week is actually Jack Conan's tackle at the end when it went to a 3-on-1. We were talking about it earlier, and it briefly looked like, oh God, are they actually going to lose this game? And it's funny, I didn't know in real time when I watched it back, the first man who got the ball of the 3-on-1 was a sub hooker for Northampton. So ideally, they would love Tommy Freeman getting that ball in his hands. It could have been a different story. But Jack Conan, you know, given he only came on in the second half, you know, bust good to get across the pitch, made a really good tackle on Augustus, who, to be fair, had a really good game with ball in hand, got him to ground, and ultimately they were able to, and then he got the turnover a few minutes later, so it was a great couple of minutes for him. But that tackle was the key part.
He got him straight down.
Yeah, if he doesn't get him straight to ground, good chance they're at least getting a penalty out of that period going to extra time. So that was my moment.
A tricky tackle as well, because he checked back on his inside shoulder. Yeah. Once he got him down straight away, there was no offload real opportunity. It wasn't a great offload opportunity. You know, if it's kind of a scrag, that could have kept going. Could have been another 10 metres. And then the Leinster guys on the other side of the pitch who were tired might have got by. I'm glad you picked that moment. I think that was a belter of a moment. Yeah.
He's very unlucky. We're talking about Will Connors being unlucky. I think Jack Conan is playing really good rugby. Every time he comes on, he makes a difference.
We've been talking about that.
And it was very noticeable when I was watching it back. I didn't pick up at it at the time, but there was a break in play with about 10 minutes left, I think it was. And Jack Conan was the one driving everything in the huddle that they were in. Next to Caelan Dorris, and he was chipping in, but it was Jack Conan was the one so noticeably driving it. So he's a massive leader for them as well. So I was delighted that he did come up at that moment, because he hasn't thrown his toys out of the pram. I mean, he's the Lions' number eight. He hasn't been playing that poorly. I think he's just so lucky that Baird and Dars have been
well.
He's played really well.
I think not playing poorly is probably not fair. I think he's, like, we've been talking
about. He's been like the form back row player for them in the last period for a while now.
It
just Dorris is now undroppable.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Like, he's not playing badly.
I thought he played very well at the
weekend. If it's number eight versus number...
He did play well at the weekend. Yeah, you can have him in six now.
Yeah.
You know, but
Baird's playing well, apart from the...
A few moments on the weekend, and, you know, the one... He had that moment of madness on the weekend, and run across the try line.
Like, now the narrative is that, like, you know, Nian Abbar, he's Peter Steph Dutoy for Nian Abbar. So does that mean he's undroppable too? Like, I think it should be... Everything should be on the table for Toulouse now, I think. After getting that kick up the arse, almost losing that game, knowing how the other finals went, I think they should look at this... Certainly the pack selection with the whole team, the whole 23 needs to be selected with an open mind and not just saying, oh, we've done this, this is pre-planned. Van der Vlier's coming off after 45, no matter how well he's playing. Like, I think everything needs to be on the table. And to be fair, Nian Abbar showed that capacity with South Africa, certainly. So that'll come in the next few weeks. But Keane, what was your moment of the week?
I was stuck between both of James and Gibson Park's try assists. I thought the second one was just brilliant.
Ah, you bastard.
You can have the other one.
I'll go with another one. I have another one.
You can share the try assists.
You take whatever you want.
Thanks for coming to me first. I thought the second one was just so clever in how he reacted so quickly to tap it out. They just seemed, himself and James Lowe just seemed to have like such an intuitive, and I asked Gibson Park after this, after the game, if for the first try, because this is what I'm going to go for, his quick thinking, if he had even made a call, and he said he didn't, that, you know, guys just expect him to take the quick tap. But I loved how he went and got the ball. I think it was Finn Smith had it. He shoved Finn Smith off the ball, took the quick tap, but the reverse angle replay shows you the quality of the pass. Now, you talk about risk or reward, because if Northampton intercept that and go the other end of the pitch, you're going, come on. But the gap that he got it through was, I thought...
I may have had a little rant about that before we got on air.
Oh, did you?
I thought it was a very fortuitous try. I didn't, because I saw you praising the pass, like, massively.
It was an amazing pass. But it was so...
He doesn't go for the intercept.
The two Northampton defenders just made a mess of it. Like, I don't think it was as great. It was a good pass, but I think Northampton should have easily shut that down.
I'm not having that. I thought it was...
If he didn't go for the intercept, he tackles him easy. If he just stays connected on the inside, he tackles him.
Mitchell kind of waved his hand at the ball.
No, but it goes over Mitchell, so he can't... Yeah. He is now out of the game. If he doesn't do that, if he doesn't panic and jump up for that ball, if he just stays like he should do properly, stay in his feet, hunts on the inside, they tackle low and it's game on. Now, Leinster is still in a great position. We don't know if they're going to score. It looked like they had them on the rack at that stage, but... I thought that was that's a moment for young players. Like, don't panic there. Like, that's a panic moment. It just, like, go, don't go for the intercept. Stick in the system to the end. Buy your team another phase. Like, I hate the going for bad intercepts like that. Really, really annoys me.
It might be a moment, but that was my moment.
You're giving it to him. It was a brilliant pass. It was always going to him. It's a brilliant pass because it's always getting to low. My problem was the Northampton, was Mitchell going up for the intercept. And once it goes over his head, he's got his back to play. He can't help. But yeah, fair enough, Kane. I didn't mean to completely demolish your moment. But I'll go with the moment for me, even though they lost the game. I thought the bit of magic from the Quinn's fullback, Tyrone, I'm going to forget his name, Green.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like he's moving at pace.
He looks like he's moving a lot of pace.
He just seems to get through.
Like, he doesn't look like an unbelievably nice sprinter or something, but you're right, he's breaking loads of tackles. Some of the offloads he came up with, but I'm going with the one. So his try is obviously the moment, but the build-up play in the moment, which I discussed before, terrible to lose defence, but wow, he sees the gap in front of him. He takes off, and the offload is just magic. I think it's to Ustase and possibly that he gets the offload to. magical bit of play.
He becomes English qualified soon.
So does that, he?
Yeah, I think in the next year, I think.
I'm surprised Razzy Rasmus hasn't had a look at him yet, because
they have so much cool.
Yeah,
I know, but Strong Green is class. Like,
very good. Williams is a good bit better. He's a nightmare when he's playing.
Might even cap him just so England can't get him, you know?
Just try, yeah. We'll get you down for a day out. Yeah, no, that was my moment. I think can't wait for the final now. Okay, is everyone buzzing for that one now? I think it'll be about, like, the two teams I think who've been playing the best are in there as well. Yeah. So
it's the final that
I think everyone hoped for, apart from supporters of other teams. It is the two best teams.
I think it'll be their eighth final for both teams. They've never played in one, so it's really set up to be an absolute belter. I'd like to thank Keane and Luke for joining me on this week's episode of the Left Wing Podcast. We'll be back next week to recap all the URC action. In the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on the Irish Independent website. So until next time, thanks so much for listening, and goodbye.